Hi everyone, welcome to Exhibiting Kinship, a podcast dedicated to discussing Indigenous interventions in the museum world. I'm Felicia Garcia, one of your hosts.
And I'm Miranda Roberts, your other host.
It feels like, honestly, just a couple months ago that we did our last catch-up episode at ATOM, but it was a full, it wasn't even this recent ATOM, it was the one before it.
No, but it feels like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I'm like, there's not that much new going on in my life, but...
You have a lot of things.
Yeah. I live in a new place. So.
Yeah. And I think we just wanted this episode to be a reintroduction, I guess, to our listeners who have been very, very loyal and kind, always telling either I or Felicia, as I've listened, or when are we coming out with more podcasts and more episodes. So I think we're finally both of us in a good position where we feel like we could do something, even if it's not always regular, but more frequently than we have in the past.
Definitely. I finally feel a little bit stable. It was like during the pandemic, I felt like stable enough, weirdly, to be able to record regularly and work on the podcast. And then I feel like once people started pretending like things were normal again, it got really unsteady and just hard to commit to recording regularly. And I think that was it. Like, people were just pretending to be normal, but it wasn't really normal again.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And I think for me, I just decided to like uproot my whole life in Chicago and move back to California. And then that's always an adjustment period, especially in the middle of a pandemic when you're not even, you know, things are not quote unquote regular. And then, yeah. And then leaving a job and then trying to find a new job. And then so, yeah, I think that we have just been in flux, and now I think that we're on good footing. So, Felicia, do you want to share what you've been up to recently?
Yeah, it's funny. Miranda and I feel like reconnected about the podcast because of this interaction that came about through my new job. I was at a dinner with a bunch of very cool Indigenous museum type folks, and this very cool professor asked me if I had a podcast. And for a second, I was like, no, I don't. And then I remembered that I do. And she was just very sweet telling me that she was a listener. And so that really inspired me to reach out to Miranda and get motivated. But anyways, I recently, in the last 6 months, accepted a job with my tribe. I'm working for our forthcoming museum and cultural center as the my title is long. Sometimes I forget it. It's Education Programs and Volunteer Manager.
Wow. And what do you, I mean, I know you, we're not going to be able to talk to you a lot about all of those things, but what is like the basis of what you're doing?
Yeah. So a lot of like the specifics of my job are kind of under wraps because the museum isn't open yet and our opening date is to be announced. You know, sometimes construction projects take a little bit longer than you anticipate. And so we're all kind of eagerly awaiting the completion. And for now, though, I'm sort of planning as much as I can the general tour, getting our volunteer program started, thinking about what kinds of programs we'll have for all ages. And it's been really fun because we have my tribe's culture department in the building right next door. Mm-hmm. And so I get to bring my experience and my expertise in museums and everything I've done since leaving home. But then I get to collaborate with the people who just really know our tribe's culture and really can bring substance to the programs that I'm creating. So it's been really fun to get to collaborate with them and create something, but also just to learn more about my own culture in a way that I haven't been able to since I left home over a decade ago.
Yeah. And I think that'll be a great episode one day, is to talk to you about, you know, the differences of working in your tribal cultural center museum versus in another space, right? And what you're facing there, whenever we can talk about those things. I think listeners would really like to listen to you. So
definitely. I'm excited to share. And I, you know, we'll talk about our hopes for the next year soon, but I am really hoping to connect with some more educators and programmers in the next year, because building a museum education program from scratch is really fun because I get to do things the way that I want to do them, but it's also just so daunting and most of the time I just don't know if I'm doing the right thing, but you know, I think that's just museums and it all works out anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. My thing for the past year has just been, we'll figure it out. It'll be okay. What else is going to happen? I mean, we could worry about the worst case scenario, but at the end of the day, what does that do for us? So
right.
I think you're going to be fine.
Thank you.
Yes.
What have you been working on? I know today is kind of a busy day for you.
So for the past 3 years, while then I was still in Chicago, I was approached by the Benton Museum of Art at Pomona College, which is a part of the Claremont Colleges in Southern California, about curating an exhibition that features the Cahuilla baskets that are in the collection here. What makes this project super meaningful and impactful is for many reasons, but mostly for me, I get to continue to work with a lot of the Cahuilla women and weavers that I have in the past. But also I get to tell a new story in a new way. And also it's not also a new story. It's also kind of an old story, but it's a good one. Basically looking at how this exhibition, which is called Continuity, Cahuilla Basket Weavers and Their Legacies, examines a series of baskets in the collection. We know who made the baskets because anthropologists took their names, and we have some of their photographs because he photographed them. And putting that into conversation with contemporary artwork from Cahuilla people or Southern California artists to get people to think about basketry as not just an aesthetic piece of art, but as a piece or an extension of the lessons that we're given, right? Or extension of the knowledge that a community imparts onto its weavers and how those things still last today. These connections are not broken even if they live in a museum collection. So bringing out that kind of dialogue was important for me. I've also been teaching here at Pomona College, a class called Reclaiming Native American Art. Basically, we just look at the colonial origins of a museum, the stuff I love to talk about, and you know, the interventions that are happening today in these spaces, and if decolonization is possible. It's been really interesting to teach at this moment. You know, all I'll say for me, speaking as myself, is being an anti-colonialist and a decolonial scholar, trying to get people to understand what that means in the world that we're living in has been an interesting process in the way that the world is operating right now. So I've been also trying to just be a mentor to Indigenous students here at these colleges, trying to help them survive these systems, because as you know, they're very hard on us. They don't accommodate us. They don't, you know, not in the ways that we need. And so how do I help them survive them?
Right.
Yeah. And I'm also on I do too much. I do too much. I'm also one of the committee, one of the scholar, oh my gosh. Hopefully I don't have to edit this out. I am also on the committee of scholars for the Smithsonian American Women's Museum that's being built.
Nice.
As one of the only Indigenous women on that panel. So it's intimidating, but it's also, I'm very honored because I feel like I'll be able to make sure that there's always at least an Indigenous woman story specific to DC in that museum. That's what I'm pushing for.
That's great.
Yeah, so lots in the pipeline, but I'm just, yeah, going along. And yeah, that's it.
Gosh, I relate to you so much. Every year, I think, like, this is a year I stop taking on side projects, except for the podcast, of course. But
yeah,
this year I finally started saying no to, like, going, doing conferences, writing articles. It's just too much. And I'm trying to really preserve my energy for my daily job working at my tribe's museum. And I think that's it. I finally found something that's, like, worth kind of channeling all of my energy into. And not that all of my other positions and experiences haven't, you know, had serious value and worth and been really pivotal to my career. I think it's just so personal now.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, I feel like I am finally feeling confident enough to become a professor. I had always wanted to teach, but everyone was telling me to. And when you tell me to do something, I don't want to do it. So, so finally, after this past semester of teaching, I realized where my strengths lie. And I think that's what I want to pursue instead of a museum job necessarily. Yeah. It's just the bureaucracy of these museums. You know, I don't, I want to be able to help people move through them, but I don't know if I want to move myself through them anymore. I love to guest curate, but I don't know if I want to be somewhere like that full time for the rest of my life.
Yeah, what has it been like teaching? I'm just kind of, I feel so out of the loop right now with like what's currently going on with museums and, you know, the next generation of us museum nerds.
You know, it's an interesting time because, well, I will say here, and I'm very open about it, they know it, is just there hasn't been a course or even there's not even a full-time curator here at this institution, at the museum. And that's for a number of reasons. They just built this building about right in the middle of the pandemic. It opened. They weren't sure what was going to happen to the collection for a while. So I'm hoping that my exhibition is the impetus that the university needs to actually hire someone full-time, a native curator full-time. So I've been able to use the collection to teach, though, has been a very interesting experience because I wanted students to understand, because not all of them are Indigenous. I think I had one or two Indigenous students in my course, but a lot of them were like in economics or like biology and like had only looked at Native art once and was really intrigued by it. Or some of them are in the arts, but they never know how to incorporate Native art into their work. And so helping them think through how, like what that could look like. But also I will say that they asked some really good questions to me that I don't have answers to, like the other day, like, or not the other day, but a few months ago, like what is liberation and what does it look like? Right. And like, I'm like, wait a second. which, you know, we can have great discussions with or about, but it's also daunting because I don't want to tell them a wrong answer.
Right.
And also too, they have more hope than I do about decolonizing museums. you know, and I try to question that word a lot, the decolonizing word, especially now with the world that we're living in. Is it even applicable? Is it even appropriate to say decolonizing a museum? Like, I don't know. So they're interested in making the art spaces better, but they just haven't had the opportunity to learn the things that they need to feel like they can be successful. And it's hard because there's only at Pomona College, there's only me and I'm a visiting professor at the moment and then one other Native faculty member and then that's it. So we have faculty on staff and in the administration level, but you know, carrying that is a lot.
Right.
And so we're trying to figure out how do we fix that here.
It's so important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thinking about, you know, decolonization a lot recently, and not even just decolonization, but like the idea of a museum. I think it's interesting being in a tribal museum and to see like some of the things that happen in mainstream museums or non-Native museums kind of replicated in that space, when I think that if we came up with an entirely new concept, something that maybe has some of the same functions as a museum, but isn't exactly a museum, you know, came up with a new term, I think that it would be a lot easier to combat some of those really deeply ingrained practices.
I agree. I think we get caught up on the word too much, right? I mean, once people hear decolonization, that's all they want to talk about, which is great. Like, we should talk, but when it comes to museums, I'm like, is this really going to get the what we need to done or across? Is this really going to protect the Native fellow that's coming in to work here? You know, like, are there, like, does it really matter? How many conversations about decolonization do we have to have? You know, I think about that a lot. And I also think about just the fact that, you know, who are we supporting enough like art handler, like native art handlers, right? Like, is there enough roles out there for us? I think there is, but I don't think that people have been shown that they like these are accessible to them, right? Like, right. You know, that there's multiple ways that you can be invested in the art world or a part of it, but you know, you're only told very certain ways of being. And I think that that's not fair either. I think when you work in a museum, no matter your position, you're learning and gaining things that other people just won't. But you know, bureaucracy again. Totally.
You just reminded me, well, I think it might be too late, but actually no, I think it'll be open by the time this episode is posted, but I just received an email from UCLA today about a care and conservation of Indigenous collections workshop happening April 10th through 12th in Santa Rosa at the California Indian Museum.
Nice.
One of my coworkers is doing the online version right now, and she's just like really excited about it. And I think it would be a really great opportunity for any particularly Indigenous folks out there who are interested in conservation or collections management. So yeah. We can share more about that on our Instagram.
Definitely. Yes, we need more of us in these roles that don't typically get filled by us.
Definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we did say we were going to mention, you know, what are some of your goals for 2024? So what are some of your goals? Personal, tribal, podcast.
I mean, just like very basic goal, not basic, but like at the forefront of my mind is just, you know, getting this tour program and our volunteer program off the ground and running. Something that I think I've heard from people is it's a little bit intimidating because they might not have worked in a museum before. Mm-hmm. We're trying right now to have all of our tour guides come from our community to tell our own story.
Yeah.
So that's really daunting to ask people to come in and speak in front of groups and share our story, especially with people who might not be from our community, since we'll be serving the general public. And so I'm really just looking forward to creating a successful program and helping people to develop the confidence to share the expertise that they already have.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a great article, and I just remembered it. My friend Adrienne at the First Americans Museum, she wrote an article in collaboration with someone about decolonizing the exhibition layout process, like the overall layout and and functionality of the exhibition process, that I think that would also be something that people would like to see. You would like to see, and it gives us a different perspective of how we can maybe try to push against the boundaries that have been placed on us, right, in these spaces, and how other similar spaces like the First Americans Museum is trying to combat those things as well.
That's for sure. Something I've been kind of grappling is how do I not like replicate my own colonial biases in this, like the development of these programs and this training, because like I've just been in, you know, Western colonial institutions developing my museum skills for several years. And it's like, how do I break down my own biases?
That is a great question. And I got a similar question from one of my friends earlier today about how do you manage, they're asking me, how do I manage working in like a space that is maybe ran by like a native curator, but still operates very much according to, you know, a capitalistic type of mindset. And I haven't been able to answer because I've been busy, but I think that those two questions really complement each other because there is no simple answer. And I think I'm still developing an answer to that question. My hope is that we're going to be able to educate the next group of museum professionals and even those who consider themselves allies to become a little bit more radicalized, maybe not like, you know, angrily, right. But just to feel like more empowered to speak up or to push. I mean, it takes all of us, honestly, like to just keep pushing these places forward. having to be brave, having to speak up when we're afraid to speak up, because these institutions won't protect us at the end of the day, right? And like, they'll take credit for our work. So how do we make sure that we don't lose ourselves fully to them? Yeah. And I don't, and it's just a really, it's a hard balance. Yeah, I don't know if you ever really figure it out.
Yeah, maybe something for the next generation, but.
Yeah, y'all figure that part out for me and then let me know.
You just reminded me of like one of my other personal goals, and then I want to hear what you're thinking about for the next year. But right now, for the month of January, I'm doing a social media cleanse. I still have all my accounts out there, but I deleted all of my apps and stuff, and I'm trying not to go on any of them. I've been kind of pulling away for the last year or so, but trying to cut ties as much as I can, or at least kind of rethinking like how I represent myself authentically to the world around me. I feel like working specifically in museum and the arts, there is so much weight put on like social media, and I really found myself getting caught up in how I was presenting to others on social media, you know, like posting about things, accomplishments or museums I was visiting or, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I just felt like that wasn't really serving me in a positive way. So just kind of like rethinking that and figuring out like how social media can align with our, or like my values and my goals for like where I want to go with my life and my career. And I know you have like, you're so thoughtful about social media and really use your platform for good and for spreading awareness. And so I'm just curious to hear what you think about all of that.
No, I think you're doing great. I was, yes, do that. take the cleanse. I did that last year too, where I just took up, I think it was only like a month or two. I didn't do it too long. For me, social media is a way to keep community, to keep in community with so many people, because I've lived in many different places, and they all have different time zones. So it's easy. That's why like I feel like good about being able to pub or post something for a particular group of people versus another. But I think my experience at the Field Museum really did shape that as well, realizing how your words can be weaponized against you, even if that isn't your intention or any, like anything, right? Like even if someone could literally just take your words and manipulate them and to paint you as the problem. And so I became much more deliberate over the kind of messaging that I was putting out there. You know, I also feel like we're in a very weird moment of even scholarly freedom, you know, academic freedom. So being cognizant of like, I want to keep talking about things, but also like we're being watched and surveilled, and it's a scary time. And it's just, I always sound very paranoid when I talk like that, but I think it's so true. When I see people posting like their location for their baby's birthday party, right, it makes me nervous. You know, like anyone could show up there. Yeah. You know, like, and so I think it's, and I think maybe I'm all, like having grown up in the generation where I didn't have social media growing up until I was like maybe a later teen, was also helpful. Yeah. And I just say to people, I'm at a point now, social media is only what, it's so curated. That is what people want you to see.
Right.
Right. Like you see the good, and I try to show the bad as well, but I think that we are too caught up in the image of it. Mm-hmm. So if you can divest and still get what you need to from it, because I feel like I still learn a lot from social media, or that's how I get a lot of great advice, or I get new book recommendations and things like that. But I've had to work to get my algorithm that way.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely something I need to work on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a balance for sure, but it's not impossible. It's just not everything is for everyone. Yeah. You have to remember that. Yeah, for everyone listening, just because you want to share it doesn't mean you have to share it.
Definitely.
Yeah. But my goals, honestly, this is the first year I feel like I feel stable enough to decide some goals since 2020. I want to pursue teaching, like I said. I will be teaching at Pomona the next academic year, both semesters. This semester with the exhibition opening. I'm focusing on the programs that accompany it and the artist talks that accompany it, and mentoring the students. That is a part of my position at this moment. But I think my overall goal for myself is to find a form of stability so I can begin to build a foundation that I haven't had before. Mm-hmm. I feel like having the background I do with the family upbringing I did and all these other things that are for maybe we'll have to have like an after hours exhibiting kinship episode where I just have come to the realization that I don't, when things get hard, I don't need to run away, that I can stay and do good work where I am and be accountable. And I just feel more of myself than I ever have before, mm-hmm. to be honest. I feel strong in my identity. I feel strong with where I'm at. And so my hope is just to help get other people get there as well. Resting, I make sure I rest. Everyone needs to rest. And deliberately resting, right? Like putting my phone away, going outside, mm-hmm. Doing something that's, physically writing instead of typing, doing things that get my mind sharp. And I want to keep this up. And that means having to, find a space, permanent space to live and a permanent space to start saving. And that way I can start working more in touch with my community because of that lack of stability I have of myself right now. It's hard to be able to navigate all of these requests and still live and then also work with community. So I think I'm at a good point now to start doing that work.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Hmm.
For the most part, and I think and I think when I look at our, because we talked a few times before this episode, and Native representation has not been where it is now. Like, I don't know about you. I never thought I would see Lily Gladstone live, win an award, right. Like speak her language. That made me cry. Like, it might seem like not a big deal to people, but hearing that was impactful. I think that for me, I would love to be able to, fingers crossed, maybe one day getting her. Yeah. Or, some of these, Sterling Harjo, like really thinking through of like, I want to hear their stories of how they got into this, and like, what are some of the avenues that other Native creators can take? So that way that knowledge doesn't live in a vacuum.
For sure. And I think that's definitely something we both want to do this year and the years to come, is to kind of broaden our scope and talk about Native representation more broadly. I mean, it's all just so connected and none of this exists in a vacuum. So I would love to just include some of these other like amazing role models on our podcasts and, just so that for our own sake, so we get to converse with them. But I think it's just so important to use our platform to share the things that these incredible people have to say.
Definitely. And also just to give them their flowers. I know that's a saying that a lot of people in online, but I really think that we don't do that enough in any of the fields that we work in. Right. I think that we don't give ourselves our flowers, but we also, I want them to know, like, you're helping me through this work, healing me also, because I think seeing something like Reservation Dogs, even if the story doesn't relate completely right to your experience, there's so many elements in there that do, mm-hmm. right? Like family, friendship, loss, that there's no way that we're not connected. And I think that we can, how do we talk about that in a museum? How do we show kinship in a museum? Is there a way to bring these stories into a space like that? I think is a question we could ask.
Definitely, how do we recreate those feelings? Like, I was watching that new movie on Netflix the other day, Fry Bread Face and Me. Have you seen
it? I haven't seen it yet, but it's on my list.
It's so good. And there were so many points in that movie where I was just like tearing up, like not because of like exactly what was happening in the story, but because it was like that feeling of recognition. How do we create that in museums? I have like experienced that before, but it's so rare and it's so important. I just can't even articulate how that feels to be like held in that way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think And maybe it's just about how do we be better relatives to each other in this moment of chaos, right? In this moment of hurt. And but that's been happening. But I think that the more I think about the future and the way this is an election year, and we won't get into all that, but how do we support each other through this moment? Because it's rough. I think we don't have to, everyone doesn't have to be best friends with each other, but we also don't need to create more issues where they don't exist, and like rather build unity
right
as well as we can. So I think we have, from where we started, I think that we have a great way to keep moving forward. And I think we also talked about revisiting some of our former guests and where they are now, because their transformation has been phenomenal as well.
Definitely. I know, getting kind of into the things they want to cover the next couple months, I would love to, Courtney doesn't know this yet, but I'd love to have her, Courtney Little Axe, back on the podcast. She's in a new role and just would love to hear her take on the work that Deb Holland's been doing and so many other amazing advocates for NAGPRA and how they're working to close those loopholes. And that's someone who I'm really looking forward to checking in with again.
Definitely. And we never released our Woody Aguilar episode. That's just, they're editing and all this. But also I was like, you know what? Grounded in Clay just came out, which is at the Met, right?
Yes.
You know more about that than I do. So I will let you talk about it. But I would love to hear Woody's, ideas and things that went into that, giving us just all perspective that we wouldn't have otherwise. So revisiting him as well, I think, will be important.
Yes, I would love to hear from Woody. So I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast, but I worked briefly on this exhibit when I was at School for Advanced Research. I was working as the special projects coordinator, which basically meant that I was really fortunate to get to work with all of the community curators for Grounded in Clay and host them at SAR and help them in any way to pick out the pieces that they selected for the exhibition and with the catalog entries. And it was just an incredible opportunity that I had. But I would love to hear from, you know, a Pueblo participant to hear what that process was like and what it was like to see this incredible exhibition, both at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture in Santa Fe and then also at the Met. I actually haven't been to New York to see it, but it looks incredible. And there was a whole group of folks who went out from New Mexico to the opening, and it just looked like an amazing time.
So there's a great companion website that accompanies that exhibition, and there's a collection of Pueblo pottery here, and being able to use that to teach my students, and so they could actually hear, like, from Rose B. Simpson, like, directly, mm-hmm. right? Like, maybe she's not in front of us, but, like, to hear her words and also to hear the language, right? So, like, hear Acoma, to hear these individuals speak their language was super impactful. Like, my students, well, some of them were crying at mm-hmm. the end of some of the videos I was sharing because they've never thought of pots in that way because they've never been shown any other way.
Right.
So it's been a very groundbreaking and transformational exhibition, even if you're not able to see it in person.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing up the website. I've been looking at the curriculum that's available in the coloring book, and we'll definitely share that on our social media. And I'm sure Woody will have, or Dr. Joseph Aguilar will have a lot to say. I'm like,
We're like, he's Woody. It's fine, but he has an official name.
Yeah, he'll have a lot to say about it. Who else? I would love to hear from some educators, some programmers.
I think we should, and I know people loved our episode with Robert and Monica. I would love to be able to revisit them, but also in like Two-Spirit, we need to get more Two-Spirit representation.
Yeah.
And different categories of even like the Asian native identity. And I think that we just need to push that a little bit more for ourselves, to keep it all within the kinship.
For mm-hmm. sure. That's so important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know last time we met, we just had an ongoing list of people that we want to have on this show.
Yeah. And I know we want to, we won't talk about this now, but I know we want to have people, someone to help us to, that way we could release these a lot quicker because it's still just us two. And so in the next episode, we'll probably be able to speak more about that or even on social media. But I think that me and you are finally in a space and an understanding that we're like, okay, we can get help now.
Yeah, well, an understanding that we don't need to struggle to produce a podcast episode when we know nothing about audio.
It made sense in 2020, right? But right now it doesn't. And so this would be a great ability for us to mentor someone and then also for them to get experience in something that's not as high stakes,
For
right?
sure. I did a, it was really sweet. A professor at IIA in Santa Fe asked me to talk to their class about the podcast. And, they, one of the questions they asked was like how to learn more about creating a podcast. And I was like, I honestly don't know. Like, if you find some resources, send them my way. We're just very grassroots around here, but I know there's people out there who have way more skills than we do in these areas. And so be great to expand our little network here.
We would. It would be much helpful, especially with all of our different things happening.
Yes. Well, and we have to do a live, I mean, like an in-person episode now that we're both in California.
I will, you know what? I will send you there. So I will send you, and I will also put the press release for the exhibition out. And the artist talks that'll be happening here. We'll have artists, Kaweah artist Gerald Clark and his daughter Emily Clark, whose works are both featured here in the exhibition. Cara Romero will also be here, and with Shoya Delvitre. And we've had and I think for me the main point is I want these students to understand the land that they live on and who it is that is being impacted by these structures. And so you might even be a great resource to maybe we do it in front of a class or something. I don't know, like maybe we have a Q&A in front of a classroom about these topics, because they're interested in this as well. They have questions about the podcast. I don't know how to. I barely know how to do GarageBand, y'all. So,
I don't
I
even know if GarageBand is the most efficient way to create a
know.
podcast, but that's what we got. So
Y'all are welcome. But I think that's all we wanted to say for this one, right? To keep it a little
I
short.
think so. And obvious, I mean, I'm not on Instagram right now, but I'll be back next month or probably by the time this episode is open. So please feel free to DM us, email us if you have any suggestions, requests for the podcast. We're open.
Yes, and we appreciate all the patience. I think that is the one thing I have been very gracious for is like everyone's telling us that we're their fans, and no one has ever been like, well, when are you pressuring us to put out more episodes, like asking, but no pressure. And I really appreciate that. It makes us want to keep coming back, I think.
Definitely.
So yeah, I'm on social media, so I'll be sure to, if there's something on there y'all really just need to like DM me about, then that's fine. But yeah, until then, I think that we'll just close it up.
Before we go, I unfortunately am not wearing any earrings today. But
I decided to be a red to be the red
I
queen
need to hear
today.
about yours.
So these are not native or native Californian. They are made in a shop in San Diego called Luna Bloom Shop, which is on Kumeyaay land. They are, I believe they are Mexicana owned. And the little, so these are roses. I forget what they're called. But then these are little Virgen of Guadalupe
Oh, those are so
pendants.
cute.
I am at a point in my life, and this might be too much information for everyone, but I have often neglected my Chicana side. And that has to do with a lot of intergenerational things and politics and identity politics. And I'm finally in a position now where I feel good about reclaiming it and re-entering that space and seeing how these two identities merge together. So I'm starting to embrace it more. Now, I'm not religious, but I did grow up believing in the Virgen, and I keep it on me for the the lessons I learned as from my matriarchs, not much so of the Catholic religion that I'm not a part of.
That's great. I mean, and, you know, that's something I can definitely connect with you on and something for a future episode. And I'm sure there's others who can really speak to those issues of like self-identification and intersectionality and dual identities, you know. So I would love to continue that conversation in the future. But that's so great. And thanks for sharing your earrings. Next time I'll be better prepared. I still have all of my things in boxes. And so it's going to be like, you know, when I open up my box of earrings, it's going to feel like, I don't know, like I'm rediscovering them for the first time.
Hey, and that's the best part because you're going to forget.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you have some pairs.
You know, sometimes I feel like I just like went into like a blackout and just like bought earrings and I don't like, I buy like a pair of earrings every week and now I'm like, all right, time to finally like wear all of these incredible earrings that I have.
That, and I will probably the next time we record a Zoom, I'll put on my makeup that I got from Prado's Beauty.
Yes.
Which is, I got their, my Christmas gift to myself was their collaboration that they did with Lauren Goodday recently. And yeah, I, you know, different ways of supporting Indigenous art. I'll show the packaging. It's an extension of Lauren's work. So I think that it's a different way for us to see these things too, is how it's playing out in different industries.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, I think that's it for today.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I'll see you later. Well, you know.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye.